And now, John Gambling with the mayor of the greatest city in the world, Michael Bloomberg. Sponsored by the Heart Institute of Staten Island. Don't let your heart skip a beat.
All right, Johnny Donovan, thank you for the intro. Yes, indeed. Welcome aboard and a good morning, everybody, to the John Gambling Show Friday edition with Mayor Michael Bloomberg. Mr. Mayor, good morning.
Good morning, John. A little cloudy outside, but...
Supposed to be a great weekend.
Supposed to be great, less humidity and lower temperatures.
Start of, for many people, the 4th of July week's celebrations.
But I will be working.
I'm glad to hear that. Glad somebody is.
I knew you would. I think it'll be a quiet week. We'll see. Do a parade on Staten Island, the Travis Parade every year. Did the same parade. It's a nice parade. And fireworks in the East River.
Nobody does them better than the Macy's folks here in New York.
It's unbelievable how good they job they do. And it's going to be a lot of fun.
Good.
I always have dinner with the same people before and then watch the fireworks and have a smile on my face.
Pools open? Beaches open?
Yes. Today we are actually, I'm going from here first to visit a police officer in the hospital who was injured, and then going to an event where we'll talk about illegal fireworks and the police seizing some. Normally, today is the first day the pools are open. Normally, I have, much to the press's surprise, jumped into the pool.
This year, you're not. You were dressed in your tie and suit this morning.
The first time that I did it, the fact that I was standing there with no shoes or socks on, in a bathing suit, and I jumped. They were surprised.
Yeah. Well, what can you tell?
After that, I sort of expected it.
What can you say?
But I'm going to miss it this time because we're going to do this other thing.
All right.
But yes, the first day, pools are open, and the warning: don't go into the pools unless there's a lifeguard. Sometimes people climb over the fences, and certainly don't go in the ocean unless there's a lifeguard. Every year, some of the riptides, particularly of the Rockaways, are really strong. And I don't care how strong a swimmer you are, when you get caught in one of those,
you can't swim against.
You got it.
Not at all. Car bomb discovered in Piccadilly in London. No more detail other than that. Maybe you can add a little something?
Still investigating. We have, as you know, a police officer full-time assigned to London. He is there, and he'll keep us posted. What you want to do is find out. Number one, we don't yet know exactly what happened and how serious it was, or whether it was somebody that really was a terrorist or mentally deranged, or whether, in fact, there was a real bomb. Until we get the information, everybody's jumping to conclusions here. But we will have our police officer give us a full report because you want to know what happened, what techniques, if there were techniques that somebody was using, and make sure that we are prepared. And we'll take a little bit of extra precaution, although, you know, we have a lot of police officers on the road anyways trying to make sure people don't drink and drive. We have extra police officers on duty this week to keep fireworks out of the hands of kids that can blow off a finger or take out an eye or even worse. So we're going to ramp up a little bit, nothing dramatic. Yeah, some you will notice, some you won't, but we're cognizant of all this.
Have to ask you, there was a story on the cover of USA Today, I believe it was on Tuesday. It was about Homeland Security monies that have been distributed to the states over the last 5 years. And extraordinarily, the state of New York has left on the table in the till 47% of $1.5 billion.
Yeah, I mean, you have to go look at every single project, one of the projects, and I can't speak to all of them. But keep in mind, if they give you some money to do something and it takes a few years to design it or to implement it, or it's an ongoing program, you would have that. So just because you get the money doesn't mean you right away run out and spend it. I will say this. We don't have extra money in the sense that, for example, the subways. We want to have better signaling. We want to have better radio communications. We want to have a lot of security and capacity-building things. And we don't have the money for some of that. So, you know, where's the money going to come from? We're going to do it anyways and then figure out how to pay for it. But, you know, we don't have extra Homeland Security money. That's ridiculous.
The state, however, it claims, has not spent all of this money. And I don't know, do you lose it if you don't use it?
Generally, you do not. Mm-hmm. If they did, they should really be criticized, but I don't think they deserve criticism here. You have to go look at each project, and I don't know what the state's doing in every single case. I can just tell you the monies that come to us, we don't just automatically spend it if it's supposed to fund something over a few years or it's supposed to help you build something that takes a while to design correctly. The money sits in a bank account while you do the work, and then when you need it, you draw it down.
All right. So there's always a need for more, a lot more money.
Yeah. I mean, and also keep in mind, you're talking about such a small amount of money, $47 million for the whole state in Homeland Security monies, considering how much money is spent on security and intelligence statewide. Just New York City, it's an enormous amount.
No, it was actually 47% of $1.5 billion.
So there's a lot of money, but, still in the grand scheme of things, these things tend to be relatively small.
You sent some folks down to Washington, I believe, to argue for congestion pricing. What's the status? Where do you stand on your congestion pricing?
There's two parts of it. One, we have to go through the process of giving the Department of Transportation in Washington the information about our plans, how it would work, what, et cetera, so that we can move from being a finalist to being somebody that actually gets money, a winner. We want to get $400-500 million for a demonstration project, which these funds out of a $1.1 billion demonstration fund. And it would let us do a lot of mass transit improvements right away before we implemented congestion pricing and also pay for all the technology on congestion pricing. And we have to go through that process because the deadline is, I think, July 17th or thereabouts. A separate process is Albany getting them to approve it. As you know, Joe Bruno, the head of the Senate, has come out explicitly for it. Governor Spitzer has come out explicitly for it. And Shelley Silver has said that he is studying it and has given us the opportunity to make a presentation. So we'll wait and see what happens there. But if we don't get that done in the next couple of weeks, we would lose the opportunity to get the $400-500 million.
So if the legislature doesn't come back, you're going to miss your $400-500 million.
Yes,
the
and then the question is, would there ever be a chance of doing this again? And I think it's harder. It would certainly. You can't say never, but it would be a lot harder to do without that money, particularly because if you put a charge in to try to encourage people to leave their cars at home and take mass transit, you've got to have the mass transit available. And what I find fascinating is if you look in the paper, everybody's yelling and screaming about the subways are at 102% capacity or some of them. If they think that they're crowded now, you just wait for the next 20 years when you add 1 million people, then they'll be crowded off the charts. And as far as I can tell, we're the only ones that have a plan to try to come up with some money to build more subways. For example, we're going to need $1 billion more for the Second Avenue subway. I don't know where that money's going to come from, with the exception of something like congestion pricing. We need more new signals so that we can
tax revenues.
Or out of the general tax revenues. So here you're encouraging people to see, that's the whole thing with this congestion pricing. There are ways that you can pay for mass transit other than congestion pricing. There are ways you can reduce cars other than congestion pricing. But nobody's come up with an idea that does both. And the charge gives people an incentive to leave their cars home and generates revenues for mass transit. If, for example, you said just passed a law saying you couldn't bring your car in, you'd reduce traffic, but you wouldn't get the monies. If you said let's just take tax revenues or raise fares, which, a fare increase is a distinct possibility. That's fine. That would give you the money to improve mass transit, but it doesn't give you reduced traffic. This does both. And unfortunately, we've had a habit in the world or in the United States, not just in New York, not just in New York City, but every place it's always done, of you promise you if you save money or you raise money, you'll use it for one thing, and in fact, it gets used for something else. Here, I think there are appropriate safeguards and enough press, and we'd have to do the mass transit improvements before we could start charging. That would be unique in government. And would ensure that the monies go where we said they'd go.
And Shelley's holding it up right at the moment?
No, that's not fair. Albany's holding it up at the moment. Let's not blame Shelley or Joe or Elliot. We need all three to come together. And I think they'd all deserve the credit if it got done. And arguably the reverse if it doesn't get done. But they're the three that at this point have to get done. The city has a very big interest, but we don't have a seat at the table. We have some influence, I suspect, but we don't have a seat at the table. And what we need is the three of them to look at this and get this done. And they've said that they're going to get everything done at once or nothing. I think in a practical sense, there are enough things that you have to do because the state can't go on without them, that they'll have to look at each of these issues. And I just want that and the solid waste management plan. If we don't do something to clean up the air that our kids are breathing, we're driving 30,000 truck routes through some of these neighborhoods, like up in Harlem, where the kids are going to the hospital four times the national average of asthma attacks, and all because a couple people are trying to keep it out of their neighborhood. There isn't any alternative. We've worked on this for 6 years. It's been 30 years that the city has worked on this problem. It's now or never.
All right, hang on. Lots to talk about and some good news coming out of the New York City school system. The chancellor will be joining Mayor Michael Bloomberg and me and you when we continue. 77 WABC. All right, we continue here on a Friday John Gambling Show. Mayor Michael Bloomberg and on the telephone, New York City Schools Chancellor Joel Klein. Chancellor, good morning. Welcome aboard.
Good morning to you, John.
And, Mr. Mayor, you got some good news.
The chancellor has some good news because the chancellor and his program, or he and the deputy mayor, Dennis Walcott, and all the people that work at the Department of Ed, what they did is they took some big schools and they split them up in the same building into small schools, which fundamentally meant you had more than one principal. The principal had a smaller group to manage and to follow. And, Joel, you want to tell the results?
Sure. The results are, we now have 47 graduating classes under the mayor's leadership. We've opened up about 200 of those schools, John, and 47 of them graduated this year, and the graduation rate is 73% without August. That means it'll be probably 77-78% with August. That's almost 20 points higher than the entire city last year, and what's really great is these schools are serving some of our most challenging students. So over 90% of the students in these schools are African American and Latino. So terrific amount of work by our principals, teachers, and so forth, and it builds on the improved graduation rates we've had over the last several years, and it's really exciting and good news. In addition, we've got a lot more kids now applying to college, and CUNY's going to be up here with us talking about how last year alone, over 2,000 more New York City high school graduates applied to CUNY. So all indicators are looking good as we end the school year.
What Joel did is he took these big high schools that arguably are too big to manage as one unit and where the graduation rates were down around 30%. And they broke them up into these smaller schools within the same building. They still share lunchroom and athletic facilities and that sort of thing, but they have different themes and different approaches to attract kids and keep them interested and to teach them. And the graduation rates jumped from the mid-30s to the mid-70s. It's really quite amazing. And it says that if you really make changes, these kids can be educated. And for so many years, the conventional wisdom was, oh, they're minorities, they can't be educated. And I think that is such an outrage. And when Joel and I came into office, we said, these kids can be educated, and we're going to show you can do it. And I think this shows you can do it. And the nice thing is we've got a bunch of more small schools, which started out with not full complement of 4 years, but less than 4 years. Each year they add another year. So over the next few years, you're going to have more small schools coming online, and that's going to help the overall graduation rate. But just think, if you were a parent and your kid was going to one of these schools where only 30% graduated, and now that kid is in a school with 70-odd percent graduated, you must have a big smile on your face. And it's because of Joel and a lot of other people who've really done it. Gates Foundation gave us some money to help do that, to help change the school system. Bill Gates and his wife really have been very instrumental in making this city better. And when Joel talks about August, some kids don't graduate in 4 years, but by August, as a little more summer school, they can graduate. And so the rate is 2-3% higher if you include August. And if you include five-year graduation rates, it's even a few points more. Some kids just can't do it in 4 years, but better 5 years than not at all. And in the past, we said if it's not in 4 years, forget about them. We don't care because it doesn't count in the numbers. What a disgrace. If it takes the kids 6 years to graduate, if they don't have a diploma today, they can't get an awful lot of jobs. And there's some great jobs out there, but you got to have an education, and that's what we're committed to doing.
Look at the school that I'm at now, John. It's really touching to me. My mother went to Evander Childs over 50 years ago. It's a school up in the Bronx. The school had a 31% graduation rate. We broke it down into these small schools. Today, it's got an 80% graduation rate.
Wow.
So it's orders of magnitude. And in addition to the wonderful support from the Gates Foundation, Carnegie Foundation has been with us on this, George Soros' Open Society Foundation. So it shows when a city and the communities all pull together, the philanthropic community and the outside supports, we've got outside groups like FEGS working with our schools here. It really shows that you can completely turn this thing around.
Well, let me ask you the bigger question. With this sort of success so evident, does it say that the direction of the New York City school system should be more of this, all of this?
Should certainly be more of it, and that's what the mayor's committed to doing. We're opening up something that's quite unique in New York City. We're opening up 5 more transfer schools that the mayor, as part of his commitment, authorized us to do. Those schools take kids that drop out of one school that didn't make it, and they get them back on track. Those schools have become the national model. You know, fundamentally, John, when I started, I used to say, we had a school system that was trying to design kids to meet the needs of the schools. Under the mayor's leadership, we now have a school system where the schools are meeting the needs of the kids. And when that happens, what you see is this kind of growth in graduation rate, this kind of improvement in test scores.
We had a reception last night at Gracie Mansion for, I don't know, 400 or 500 kids who are valedictorians or salutatorians or academic champions. There's different ways of measuring it, from all the high schools, and the diversity of the kids was just unbelievable. And these are the kids who are going to have opportunities to go to the best schools and become the future leaders of this country, become future success stories of this country, come back to this city and really make a difference. And you look at the faces of these kids, and they're so proud of what they've done. And the more impressive, you look at the parents of these kids. And I'll bring us back to Joel. Joel was the first one in his family to go to college. Can you imagine the look on his parents' face? Came from New York City public housing, New York City public schools, public high school. Where'd you graduate, Erasmus?
Bryant High School.
Right. Okay. And then went to Harvard and Harvard Law. Is that right?
Columbia and Harvard Law.
Oh, well, it's not two good schools, but that's okay. At least you had one New York school there. You know.
No, they're great stories, and we can only hope that they will continue. And the program that that you and the chancellor put together will continue as well. I think that's one of the concerns that many have in New York. What happens afterwards? But we'll worry about that when the time comes. Chancellor Klein, good to talk with you as always.
Thank you. Have a great summer, John.
All right, you too, Joel. Thank you very, very much. Mr. Mayor, hang on. It's the half hour. We'll get right back. Got lots on the plate here to talk about. 1-800-848-WABC. If you have a question, the telephone number for Mayor Michael Bloomberg. Right here, though, George Weber. George. 77-WABC. We continue with Mayor Michael Bloomberg at 77-WABC here on the John Gambling Show. I've asked you this, I think, almost every year about this time that we've been sitting here on a Friday.
Which is it?
Is there enough power for the summertime? We already had one blackout.
You want a complicated answer or
somewhere in between? Somewhere in between.
Simple answer is I hope so.
Right. Okay.
complicated answer. There's two parts to the problem. One is generation. One is distribution. What happened last summer was a failure in the distribution system. The generators had enough power. Long term, the generators are polluting our air and don't have enough power. So long term, we've got a bill. We need some legislation in Albany. We need to change the ways companies get power generation companies get paid. You want them to get paid for giving us the energy we need, but having less pollution and actually generating less. So switching the lowering the demand and doing it more efficiently is one thing. Then there's the whole distribution system. Above ground comes down when you have trees come down and storms, no surprise. Below ground, generally very reliable compared to any other underground system in the country. But when it goes out, it's an old system. It's got its problems. Con Ed gets criticized every time. And the last thing I need is another let's go defend Con Ed story. But we all want Con Ed to do a good job And we've got to work with them and find ways to do it. And the city also has to be prepared in case there's a power outage. The other day there was an outage for 45 minutes, and we fortunately didn't have to do anything, but we, by the time the power came back, we'd already mobilized extra police and fire and ambulances and lights. And, you know, we're ready. We're starting. We have a big plan, well thought out, and we're starting to put it into action. And then fortunately we're able to call back.
You know what struck me? The vulnerability of the city with one transformer taking out such a large swath. I mean, if the bad guys got here, it's pretty easy to slow this place down.
You know, I'd like to think that we have good security against terrorism. Nature is a lot stronger than terrorists, and you can't have all the things. You saw what happened a few years ago when something happened in the Midwest and it took down the whole East Coast. We are very vulnerable to certain infrastructure systems, a water tunnel, a sewage treatment plant, a bridge, the telephone network, power distribution network, the port, the ability to get through narrow channels.
The
internet. I mean, all of these things. We like what technology gives us, but we have to understand that with dependence on these new things comes a different kind of vulnerability than we had before. Before, the vulnerabilities were more physical things you could see. You know, a rock slide or a lightning bolt hitting you or a flood. Today, there's those, but there's also the technological risks.
We talked about congestion pricing and the problems it's running into in Albany. Another thing that was up there and is under the control of the New York State Legislature, and that is a housing bill that you had looked for, the city council had looked for, and looked towards to increase middle-class housing and low-end housing.
Well, I hope the governor vetoes it. We really need him to do it. What's happened is we came up with
the 421As.
Yeah,
I'm not sure what that means.
There's an incentive to have developers or requirements, depending on how you look at it, to build affordable housing along with market-rate housing. You want people to build affordable housing, but you don't want it to be so onerous that they won't. And there are places where they're going to build anyways. There's no reason to give them tax breaks. We, working with the city council, in our city, came up with a good balance of building affordable housing and also building the market rate housing that we need. We consulted with everybody. It was an extensive study. It was done totally on the merits. It gets to Albany, and with some pressure from one real estate group here who ought to be ashamed of themselves, all of a sudden it applies to a much bigger area, which will really keep housing from being built there. It's going to hurt the very people that everybody talks about helping, and give some tax breaks to a developer that doesn't need them, and which we didn't have to do. And I can only hope the governor stands up and vetoes it, because it really should not become the law of this state.
Speaking of laws and initiatives that you have taken, the Senate committee yesterday voted 19-10 to pass an amendment that mandates prison time for police officers or use federal gun trace data for anything except specific investigations.
You know, we're in a post 9/11 world, and Congress is trying to pass, well, it's not in yet, remember,
no,
this is just the Senate side.
Right.
Congress is trying to pass a law to keep police officers from sharing data about bad guys. Of all the disgraces, this is done strictly for a gun lobby. And, you know, we should, how are you going to look the parents or the spouse of a police officer killed by a bad guy who has a gun illegally, or a civilian killed by a bad guy that has a gun illegally? If Michael Moore tried to do a movie, nobody'd go to see the movie. If Al Gore wrote the book, nobody'd read it. Nobody'd believe it. Nobody would believe that Congress could do something that explicitly says we're going to protect the criminals. Because the only thing this has to do with is a federal law that says criminals can't buy guns. This is the information to make sure you can enforce that law. And they pass a law to say you can't enforce it, or they're trying to pass a law.
And do you maintain that the NRA is pushing this and has gotten the Senate to do this because they're afraid that it will affect gun owners generally?
If I were the NRA, I would force this, make sure that the cops got the guns out of the hands of the bad guys, because someday there will be an incident which nobody's going to be able to stop, and maybe the public finally will stand up and say, I'm not going to take it anymore. I want my kids safe. I want our the police officers going to go on strike, the whole country, and say, you're taking away, we're the ones out there. It's our lives on the line every day, and you're passing a law to make our job more dangerous. We have, you know, I've had, I think I've given eulogies at 8 police officer and auxiliary police officer funerals in the last 5.5 years. And, you know, I'd do anything to not have to do a ninth. But, you know, every one of them, 2 of them were actually assassinated from the back seat. A perp takes a gun and shoots them both in the head when they're on a buy and bust mission to get guns out of the hands of criminals. And Congress, I don't know how they look themselves in a mirror. I just, it's inconceivable to me. What are they going to do when they face God?
It is unbelievable. You wonder what goes on down there. So let's see here. Aqueduct Raceway. Governor wants to. I know this is a state issue, but this is a big parcel of land. Do you think Aqueduct should stay open or be sold off?
I'm going to leave it to the governor because he's got enough problems without me. Yeah, not punt, but I'm not. You know, I haven't looked at all the issues. I read what I read in the paper.
Right.
I try not to talk about things unless we've done a real study with real experts. It doesn't mean the study's right, but at least you've got some real science behind it. And I don't know, whatever the governor chooses to do, I'll support him in that.
All right. There was an article about the parks system, a report by an independent private organization saying that the parks in New York City are sort of dissolving into a class form.
Anything but. We're trying to open parks, more parks. We've opened more parks this administration. I don't know if it's more than anybody else, but an enormous number of parks. We've beefed up 1,000 more people working for the Parks Department, something like that. More money than has ever been spent on parks. Raising more money privately for parks as well. And are all parks up to the standards we'd want? No, but we keep opening them and we keep building and keep renovating and we're going to keep doing that. And there are certainly parks and neighborhoods that have been neglected over the decades and we're not going to neglect any of them. Can we get to all of them? No. We're going to try, and our successor will have to keep doing it.
All right. Well, I'll tell you what we're going to do. Let's take a break right here. We got a full bank of phones. 1-800-848-WABC is our telephone number. It will be your question for Mayor Michael Bloomberg next.
WABC.
All right. Mayor Michael Bloomberg, John Gambling, and you here at 77 WABC. Mr. Mayor, time to go to the telephone. What do you say we start with Joe out in Smithtown? Joe, you've got the mayor. Go.
Hello, Mr. Mayor.
Hi, Joe.
Thank you for doing such a great job with the education system in the city. Congratulations.
Thank you.
However, I would like to know why the New York City Police, which is the finest police in the country, there's no finer police department, are being paid such a low salary, and it always leads to graft and corruption when they have that. It was in the Knapp Commission, all the commissions before that. It always shows that it leads to a deterioration.
All right, Joe, there's 2 things here. We're running out of time. One is I think the numbers say that graft and corruption is very minimal. We really haven't had a scandal in a long time, and I think most you'll find that the police officers of this city are honest. I can't tell you that all 35,000 on the streets are perfect. No, that's not the real world. But generally speaking, I think they are very honest, and the standards that we have for them is higher probably than ever before. In each administration, we keep raising the standards, and I hope our successors keep raising the standards. So police officers have to obey the law as well and have to be respectful, and they're well-trained, and we really work very hard in the police academy to give them the kind of training to understand the real world. In terms of the amount of money they get paid, I think you got to be careful here. The police, and there was one of the tabloids today had an editorial, I think it was the Post, could have been the News, but one of them, was it the News or the Post that had an editorial, one of the two, saying that what's happened really is a disgrace and it's hurting the police department, and it is true. The police officers, the police union, the Patrolmen's Benevolent Association, convinced an arbiter to take money away from people who hadn't yet joined the department and give it to the more senior staff, and that brought down the salaries dramatically for those who was starting out and makes recruiting much more difficult. But keep in mind, the monies didn't leave the police department. We gave them the same raises that all the other agencies gave within this pattern, and it just went to the more experienced and longer-serving officers. And we've tried to fix that. We've offered a number of deals to the PBA. They wanted to go to arbitration, didn't want to talk. We have tried to get it to arbitration, because if that's what we're going to do, at least let's get it going. They have been trying to slow it down, but my hope is that we can always, you know, hope springs eternal. I hope we can come up with an agreement with them that would be in their interest and certainly in the city's interest. But it can't go on this way, and we'll eventually, if they don't come to an agreement, get it to arbitration. And sadly, in arbitration, nobody's a real winner. You're always better doing something face-to-face. But for the last two or three times, the PBA has not been willing to negotiate. So it isn't that there are people, the newer police officers are getting a lot less, and it is hurting recruiting, but it's because of the PBA, and we've got to fix that.
You did have a graduating class this week.
1,100. We would have liked to have a lot more. The valedictorian was also the person who won the physical fitness award, and she was a Harvard College graduate who gave a great talk. Extraordinary woman. She's going to be, I joked with the police commissioner, you know, he started and worked his way all the way up from a rookie all the way to the
you
being the police commissioner twice. Well, I think she's a bit young. Ray will be retired by then. But that's exactly the kind of people. You can recruit and get the best and the brightest. And this, you know, people say, oh, the physical fitness person's never going to win the academic award. This woman won both.
It was really great. It's a great story.
It is a great story. It gives you real hope for the future, but we do have to solve this problem of entry-level salaries.
All right, let's go to Harold out in Queens. Harold, what's your question for Mayor Michael Bloomberg?
Hello?
Yes. Hi.
Go.
Hey, good morning, Your Honor.
Good morning.
Listen, I'm a New York City transit worker. I drive a bus for MTA, and my question is, many city workers have acronyms. You call the police the finest.
Finest, bravest, boldest, bravest, strongest, yep,
there
smartest.
My proposal is MTA transit workers, New York safest.
I'm all in favor of it. Next time I talk to Lee Sanders, I'm going to try to remember to tell him that. He is the governor's appointee to run the MTA, which is a state agency, although the city does have a few members on their board. But it's fundamentally a state agency because it's designed to provide regional transportation, not just within the city. You know, I don't know, Harold, I will say I seldom take a bus. I take the subway virtually every day. Last night it was crowded, incidentally, for those that want to know. I took the subway uptown, but everybody fit on and everybody got along and we chit-chatted with people.
Nobody gave you an elbow?
No, although I did see two people who weren't too happy with each other, but they didn't start a fight. And it's New York and it was hot, but we came uptown. I can just tell you, the subways at least, which I have first-hand experience, they certainly deserve, and I assume the bus drivers do, to be called the safest because it's a system that is so much better than when I came to the city back in 1966. Then it was covered with graffiti, there was trash on the floor, panhandlers every place, the doors wouldn't close, it was not air-conditioned, the trains didn't arrive frequently, you couldn't fit, the signs were terrible. And today, I still think the MTA does a pretty good job. Could they do a better job? Yeah, sure, we can all do a better job, but they deserve to be called the safest or whatever, but a euphemism would be nice, and I will recommend it to Lee Sanders.
All right. Well, Mr. Mayor, I'm afraid that we're almost out of time, and there's probably not enough time to do justice to another telephone call, but you will be down at the beach swimming in the ocean this weekend?
I certainly will not go into the beach until I see a lifeguard.
Okay, very good. Have yourself a great
thank you,
weekend, and I will not see you next week. I'm going to be taking the week off, so a couple of weeks, we'll check back in together.
You're going to have a good time, I hope.
I
get
hope
some
so
rest.
Too.
You need it.
Absolutely so. Thanks a lot. Mayor Michael Bloomberg this morning at 77 WABC. Stick around. Lots still to do. Chris Wallace.